Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion. This is my co-host, Bill Carnes, and together we are totally unprepared. You were not here last week.
I was not.
How was the graduation?
It was excellent.
Awesome.
Yeah, one of my daughters graduated high school.
Your eldest, yes?
Well, no. My eldest is married.
Well, yes, but
my next
there's three
eldest.
That are grouped right there.
Yes. So the oldest of the three, but my second eldest graduated high school. I'll have another one graduating next year and another one a year or two after that.
Right on.
So, as a matter of fact, my two eldest, my eldest took my second eldest on a 10-day vacation to the Hawaiian Islands.
Wow.
And today is day three.
So sort of as her graduation present, so to speak?
Graduation slash birthday. She just turned 18 recently. So, I think today is day three. Might be day two. Day two? Day three? I think today's day three.
Okay.
Anyhow, of course, I've been to Hawaii several times, and I've been to the majority of the islands. I keep getting told, Kauai is the most beautiful island. Oh, God, it's the only one I haven't been to. And every member of my family's been there multiple times.
And raves about it.
Right. So next time, perhaps.
All right.
But so I gave them some ideas on where to go, where to stay, what to do, what to see. What I didn't know was the very first night they were there, they landed, got a car, and they went to the Disney Resort Aluani, which is... it's encroaching on the west coast of Oahu, which is really, that's any further north up that western coast is not good. It's basically the Hawaiian homelands. And unfortunately, if there is a dump in Hawaii, that's it. And they ended up staying up there. And I didn't know. I would have told them, no, once you get to the Aluani Resort, when you're done, go back the way you came. Do not go up the coast. I've been up there. It spoils your idea of Hawaii. So sure enough, they went up there, they stayed just one night, and then they went to the North Shore, and they're goofing off up there now.
Oh, very cool.
It's good stuff.
Well, in your absence, oftentimes what we do is we just have the station plug in whatever.
A rerun.
Yeah. Right. But there were some things on my mind, so I did an encore presentation of the Dave Champion Show.
And, you know, it's interesting. Yesterday I was around town. I had to go to the courthouse for a couple of things, and I tell you, I cannot walk into the courthouse, do what I need to do, and walk out without talking to at least seven or eight people that I know. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Small town. Right.
And I had two different people say, hey, it's totally unprepared off there. What's going on? I saw Dave Champ is on. I'm like, no. It was a one-off coming back on. Unscheduled deal, and Dave had some things on his mind. I was out of town.
So. Well, you know, the really funny thing is, I had a point to make. I was doing a political, well, more of a cultural issue. And so I did something I would never ordinarily do on a television show. I wore a tank top, okay, with all the ink showing, right?
What color was the tank top?
It was kind of an electric blue. It was chosen. Okay. It was chosen for visual effect.
Okay.
But so it was pretty funny because not only did I reprise the Dave Champion Show, but I did something completely out of character, which probably took people by surprise. But it was with intent as part of the opening story. So the opening topic I covered. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, we are in Pahrump. We always talk about national things.
We do.
Let's talk a little bit about something. More or less local.
Okay.
What I want to talk about, and you and I touched on this briefly, is the construction that's going on the Vegas side of 160 as you approach the hill before you come down into the Pahrump Valley area, and what it may signal economically for our part of the woods.
There's a couple of things about that roadway. We're talking about where Highway 160 intersects with Highway 159, which is the Red Rock Loop that eventually turns into West Charleston Boulevard.
From there to the top of the saddle.
Yeah. That was actually repaved a decade ago, completely repaved up to the top of the hill.
I remember.
And during that time, a lot of the discussion was, wow, they're doing all this construction. Let's hope they finally make it four lanes.
Right.
And they didn't.
No.
So now... they're going to tear up that blacktop. I mean, keep in mind, blacktop is good for 20 to 30 years, depending on the weight of the vehicles, the oftentimes how often it's used, and the weather depends on longevity. So it's at max 50% used up. All that crap's getting torn up.
Yeah.
But they are going to four lanes.
They are.
Which is awesome.
Which is the entire purpose, as far as I can discern, the entire purpose of the project. They've decided that now, which is really what this story is about, now is the time to take it from two lanes to four lanes.
Correct.
And there can be reasonable people can differ on what the intent is of that. Now, I don't know how the audience is aware. I know you are from your time looking at government matters. every region has a master plan. And that master plan can be for 20 years or it can be for 100 years. And the government will pull the trigger on various aspects of the master plan when the time is appropriate, because they don't spend the money just because.
And oftentimes perpetrated by the private industry behind
Correct.
All of that. Yeah.
And so we know that increasing that road to four lanes has always been part of the master plan. So the question is, why now? Okay. So the Dave Champion theory, for what it's worth, is casinos, one of the big entertainment companies, owns a lot of the property just after you come over the hill, you come down onto the flat off there to, what would that be, the southwest?
It's kind of the near the turnoff to the back gravel road to Sandy Valley.
Correct. Thousands and thousands and thousands of acres out there are owned by the Vegas casinos, companies like Disney, through holding companies. You really have to work to track it down. So my theory is that we've gone through the economic doldrum since 2008. While there's still a lot of concern that the economy is poised to fail and stumble again, there's also some signs that the economy is heating up again.
Yeah, ramping back up.
So my concept is, since they can't grow Vegas any taller, I mean, it's pretty much maxed out. Where are you going, right? They can't go out. They can't go up. The only place for them to go, they can't go out to the Mesquite side. So the only place really for them to go is they can go south down one down 15, which I'm not sure they actually want to do, or they can go over the hill where they have limitless, almost limitless land. And I think there are some advantages to them doing that. It gives them the opportunity to enlarge what I call the Vegas experience without necessarily enlarging Vegas proper.
Yeah, and there's also, from that area, you can actually look through the saddle of mountains at night and see the headlights off Interstate 15 going through roughly Gene, Nevada. There's a prison out there and a couple casinos and a small airport. And
Executive Airport, correct?
It's not executive. Now, the Executive Airport is actually in Henderson, but it's just a smaller one. They do a lot of skydiving, some other things out of there, but it's a very nice airport.
Okay.
And it's also the area where they have designated through this master plan of having a new international airport to supplement McCarran, because McCarran is maxed out. No more runways, no more flights in and out. As a matter of fact, they only have one instrument-rated runway out of the four that will take the big jets. So on the occasion that there's really crappy weather, that's when
it
really gets stacked up. Anyhow, where I'm going back to is there is a road that winds through that area that takes you as far as Sandy Valley, and then a gravel road for about 7 or 8 miles that takes you to 160. That might be nice to see straightened out a little bit better and have a little bit nicer pathway in and out of Pahrump into this valley through this area.
Right.
And it also could link up with the rail system with the Union Pacific.
Wouldn't that be great?
And we could get light rail in and out of here, maybe do a little bit of industry.
Well, you know, and then part of what powers industry is natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
And Pahrump is one of those places, one of the few places that doesn't have natural gas.
Correct.
And there's the discussion has always been historically the desire to, if you're going to put a rail spur in, when you're doing all the foundational work, drop a natural gas line adjacent to it because you've got your easement,
mm-hmm.
right? That would be interesting to see where the railroad easements are, because the West has a ton of railroad easements where there are no railroads. So it'd be interesting to do some research into that. But
largest private landowner in America?
Union Pacific Railroad.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's funny because they've just got an easement, but they've got so many linear miles of that easement, they're the largest single private, well, pseudo-private landowner. Most people aren't aware that back in the heydays of the railroad, when they were booming and the Chinese were being used like slave labor, those were actually corporations of which the United States government was a portion.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because they were being built in federal territories, not states, the territories. And so the government insisted on being a shareholder.
Part and parcel.
Sure. In the corporate. Yeah, yeah. And it also pushed some legal issues aside that would have pertained to the railroads if they were purely private.
I wonder if that has anything to do with why the government continues to subsidize Amtrak at such a massive loss every year. How can you possibly, Mike?
You know, I haven't looked into it, but I'm guessing Amtrak is very much like the post office, that it's private in name only, private in perception only. When you get several layers in, you find out, no, it's still a government entity. But back to the natural gas and the rail spur. What would be a huge boom for Pahrump would be if they brought that rail spur in you were talking about, and they combined that with bringing natural gas in. Now, my understanding is that the natural gas companies are anxious to bring natural gas in here.
There is a massive pipeline. As a matter of fact, where 160 and 159 meet, where that construction began, If you continue east into Las Vegas, not more than about a half a mile, There is a massive natural gas pipeline going through the valley and heading off in towards California.
Oh.
And you'll notice if you're driving, you can look to the right or to the left. If you look to the south, you'll see a wide swath that has been cut into the land, and it's not just natural desert anymore.
Sure.
There's a massive natural gas pipeline that comes from somewhere up in the north. Michigan, perhaps, I forget. I was once told the entire story, but we're talking close to 20 years ago when I learned this, and I forgot the details. But it comes and it wraps around the Las Vegas Valley and out, and it goes all the way to the Southern California coast.
Well, if they could tap in around Gene and then bring that with the track, because, like, again, I've been told that the natural gas companies are all about bringing natural gas in here. They can't afford to do it, though, with our small population base, unless there was already a path bed being established, which would be established by the railroads, and they would basically piggyback on that.
It's interesting. I've actually haven't lived anywhere that has natural gas sans about 1 year on a military base for better part of 20 years.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
But when we're speaking about the interests of Pahrump, if there were casinos, entertainment parks, gigantic golf courses and so forth, what we're talking about in that area,
highway,
talk about jobs and opportunity and growth for our town.
That would be nice. I like the Dave Champion theory. We'll be right back.
We are back, and now it's time for what is up with seemingly, in some areas, making zero progress? We complain about politics often, the American people, and we complain about all the varying aspects of it. We complain everything from the cost of it, cost of government, to how politics operates, to the two-party paradigm, which, unlike virtually every other place in the world, we are stuck with here in America. And while we've made progress in a number of areas, we appear to have made pretty close to zero progress in addressing the fundamental difficulties that people feel exist with our political system. Let me give you an example. One of the things that Americans are none too happy about is the obnoxiously high cost of government. When we look at, there's something called the Tax Freedom Day. That's when certain experts estimate that when you're done paying all your taxes, income tax and property tax and sales tax and this tax and that tax, that you're now actually keeping your money. And people probably would not be surprised to learn that that day is getting further and further back in the calendar. I think when I first was aware of it, it was someplace in March, and now it's getting towards the end of May. So, I mean, how far can that go along, right? June? Now we're into half of our work is that money is ripped from us at the muzzle of a gun. Try not paying and see what happens. At the muzzle of a gun to pay for this thing called a government. Back in 1776, this is a historical fact, just two blocks from where the signers of the Declaration of Independence were signing that document, there was at that time a tavern two blocks away. And in the front of the tavern, they had a sign. And it had four characters on it. The first one was supposed to be a character looking like the king. The second one was somebody that looked like a general. The third one was somebody who looked like a priest or a pastor. And the third one was somebody who looked like a working man. And here was the words that were underneath each of those images. Under the king, it says, I rule all. Under the one looking like a general, it says, I fight for all. Under the one that would look like a pastor, it said, I pray for all. And under the one looking like the working man, it said, I pay for all. So in 1776, our predecessors, our ancestors, had the same issues with government that we have here today. Is it merely the nature of things? Or are we somehow incapable of altering those dynamics when they displease us? Another example, much more recent. Joan Baez, you probably most of you have heard of her. In 1969, she was interviewed, and I recently had occasion to see a portion of that interview. And she said during that interview, we have to do something to change the construct. We have to do something so that our only choices are not between the Republicans and the Democrats. I can't tell you how many people I know in 2016 that have the same exact sentiment today. 1969 it was being said, and I don't believe Joan Baez was the first person to ever express that sentiment, obviously, but she was the first one that I've seen going back that was on camera expressing that. And here we are in 2016, and I can't tell you how many people I know, myself included, who believe that the two-party system is a broken system that is used to control us rather than us control the government. So from 69 to 2016, zero has changed. And these are just a couple of examples where we look at a system, we gripe about a system, we want the system to be different. We bemoan all the problems and the corruption and the manipulation of the system, but yet the system continues. Now, let's talk about the two-party system. The two-party system is, in my personal opinion, a completely corrupt system that, at least in modern U.S. history, has been used so that the power elite maintain the leadership of this country no matter what the people want. And that's the key element. I think this particular election cycle has illustrated that perhaps more than any other. There was a question at one point concerning the Republicans, whether when they got to the convention, no matter how well Donald Trump performed in the states, that he was not going to end up being the nominee because the RNC wasn't going to allow it. Now, we'll see what happens at the convention, but the prevailing wisdom at this time is that that's a dead paradigm now. The RNC has decided that they are going to run with Trump, that the cost of trying to upend him at the convention would simply be too great. When we look at the Democrat side, we see that no matter how much Bernie Sanders wins, and he's been, in my opinion, when you look at where Hillary Clinton comes from, who she is and the power base she had, Bernie Sanders has basically kicked her ass. And no matter how many locales, jurisdictions in which he wins, she gets the delegates. And, of course, the Democrats have their own superdelegate thing, and I'm not going to get into all that. But simply to point out that on the Democratic side, people who are registered Democrats have virtually no say. I've spoken to some people here locally in Nye County who went to the state Democratic convention, and a lot of them have just, so euphemistically speaking, torn up their cards, and they don't intend to have anything to do with the Democratic Party ever again because the whole thing, the fix was in, and it was contrived, and it didn't matter what the delegates wanted. It only mattered what the people in charge wanted to have happen. From all the reports I've read, and I watched some of it on video, it was when it comes to a free people being in charge of who's going to represent them, it was a complete and utter travesty. It was a con job. The fix was in, and the people who ran it didn't even care that it was apparent to everybody present that the fix was in. It was just a grotesque farce of a free people selecting chosen representative. And the Republicans, it seemed for a while, were going to go to the same place at their convention. It just seems that the RNC has decided not to push it. So we can see that the, and of course, remember, the people who run the DNC and the RNC, where do they get their horsepower from? If you think it's a bottom-up organization, you're wrong. It's a top-down organization, and what gives the people at the top their power is the billionaires who contribute. I saw a statistic recently that said something like the top 1% of all income earners in the United States contribute 35% of all campaign contributions. Wow. 1% has one-third of the influence. Okay? That's more like an oligarchy than it is a free country. So what could we do about the two-party system? Well, the only thing that I can see to do about it is a constitutional amendment. And I'm not going to get into the detail and read out to you what the content of that amendment would be. But suffice to say, it would change how people get on the ballot. It would change the power that parties have and don't have in the electoral process. And it would allow you and I, our voices, and the hundreds of millions of our fellow Americans to actually be heard during the early stages when people are considering who they might want to vote for, who should run, and what eventually ends up being the case would be controlled from the bottom up, not the top down, as it is today. Bill?
I was a delegate to the Republican State Convention a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
I didn't go. For various reasons, not the least of which there's only one candidate left. And the major thing to do at these conventions is to select and elect delegates to represent the state and the candidates that they want to represent and vote for at the national convention. As there's only one choice left, I saw it to be much ado about nothing. The state Republican Party had a very ugly state convention in 2008. At the time, Sue Loudon was the state chair, and Bob Beers was the chair of the convention. Interesting thing in Nevada law, the county chairs of the county parties are not permitted in Nevada law from chairing their county conventions. As well, the state party chairs cannot chair their own conventions either. That's in state law. You must get a special convention chair, for counties and for state.
By the way, I have no idea why private political parties are controlled by the legislature.
There's very little when it comes to the law, and most of the law that's in there working within the construct are, unless your bylaws otherwise say, this is what you default to. That's the way the majority of that chapter is.
But you understand what I'm saying.
I do understand.
These are private organizations.
I totally understand. Okay. However, where I was going with this is that the Republican convention of 2008 was disastrous. Same thing. They turned off the lights. They walked out. So the delegates decided.
In order to control the outcome rather than from the bottom up speaking.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So what happened was the delegates decided to turn the lights back on, elect new people from the floor of delegates to act as convention chair, parliamentarian, and they carried on with the convention and got the business done.
Somebody was thinking.
They were. As it turns out, the state party took it to court. And what the court decided was, okay, we're going to take about half of what the first half of the convention did and about half of what the second half of the convention did, and you're going to combine it. You're going to have to work with each other on it. Fair and equitable, I guess. The Democrats failed to learn from that, where they pushed, as a matter of fact, the state chair of the Nevada Democratic Party, Roberta, and I forget her last name, it was Roberta's rules, not Robert's rules, ran the convention, chaired the convention. Well, that kind of starts to nullify things right there. A number of other things happened, too. The videos are pretty impressive about how much of an uproar it became. She took a vote, and then before announcing the vote, it was very clear the votes, the nays had it. Before that, she articulated, in the opinion of the chair, and I'm paraphrasing, and the chair's opinion cannot be overruled or questioned, I'm going to say the yeas. You knew how she was going because she was prepping you for, I'm going to make a call that you're not going to like because it was against what you guys said. No division of the House, no nothing. It was an absolute sham, and it was a Harry Reid supporting Hillary Clinton, stuff it down your throat, screw you to the Bernie supporters all the way.
You know, and I support neither one of those candidates, but I do support the Democratic people from the bottom up being able to get their person.
Undoubtedly. Yeah. I mean, as ignorant as they might be because they're Democrats and supporting one socialist over another, they still should have a voice.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back. Let's find out what Bill rants about today. You know what really grinds my gears? Corruption. Now, corruption comes in many, many forms. A lot of people believe that corruption, especially in the political realm, means that a politician got paid some cash under the table and now they're selling their vote. That is one very mild form of corruption, one of many, many, many forms of corruption. And there's all kinds of legal forms of corruption. As a matter of fact, Nevada is listed as one of the top three states for political corruption. The primary reason is there are very, very few laws governing a lot of the things that otherwise become corrupt acts and part of that entire corrupt process. So a politician in Nevada can say, people are saying I'm corrupt, I haven't broken any laws. You're right, because there's a lack of a lot of these laws out there. Where the same thing's done in various other states and communities would land somebody in jail, or at least in a lot of hot water under investigation. So I don't much care for that sort of thing. There's a lack of integrity because everybody else is doing it and there's no law against it. Doesn't mean that it's right. I have a real problem with that. One of the things that corruption leads to is certainly pandering. Let's take Nevada, for example. Every single government project that requires somebody to bid and the bid is awarded, anything over whatever it is, I think it's $250,000, something like that, is paid by what we call prevailing wage. That is high-end union wages. A friend of mine owns a business, and he gets some various prevailing wage contracts from the state of California. And I've helped him out a few times here and there when he's done regular work for standard clients and when he's done work for the state under prevailing wage. And I got to tell you, the prevailing wage is pretty nice. 2.5 times the pay for exactly the same work. Who's paying that? Well, the people of California were paying that. Thank you, people of California, for being so ignorant as to actually allowing those sorts of laws. Nevada has the same thing. Now, in California, it's any job. Because keep in mind, we are not doing $250,000 work. We're doing work that was maybe $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. A few of us out there working for a couple of days, we're done. So the work in Nevada has a different cap. And there's provisions, different things paid, different areas. Depending on how much the project comes in, there's varying things within this whole corrupt idea. But you're paying for it. Another thing that really grinds my gears about it is when we have some sort of a government structure, whether that be a building, an overpass, a walkway, whatever, and it's all fancy and decorated and art deco. You know, the Clark County Government Center, it's downtown Las Vegas, has a really, really neat cafeteria. It's a pyramid. Now, pyramids are very difficult to construct. Because to tie all four corners and to keep them upright before you tie them in at the top can be very difficult and potentially disastrous. I happen to know a man who was a crane operator during the construction of the Luxor Hotel. And he told me during the construction, they still had not finished, while they're building it, still not finished how to engineer it through the construction before they got it tied in at the top. They finally got it figured out literally in the 11th hour. I don't know for a fact that's true. I'm just telling you what the lead crane operator on that project told me, who's in the know. When we have a government building that's all kinds of angular and fancy and weird and got all these beautiful marble floors and triple pane smoked glass, a pyramid friggin' cafeteria, and the landscaping around there is amazing. And on the way there, you're going through some overpasses, going under some underpasses, and all this really neat, pretty stuff on there, and these animals in Cocopelli, and some artist rendering of what a cave drawing of a bighorn sheep is. We pay for all of that. And we pay for all of it at prevailing wage. So within these contracts, there's overruns that can happen through the contractors. And overrun do they. There's a visitor center. That visitor center that I'm talking about is the one over at Hoover Dam. Relatively new. I think it was finished about 15 years ago. Original costs were estimated to be between $4 and $5 million. It costs us more than $40 million, roughly 10 times what the original estimate was. How about that? Now, we call that government inefficiency. That's government being screwed, because a government doesn't have a construction team. They don't build roads. They contract them out based on laws, rules, and regulations. And when we end up with these things that are gorgeous works of art monstrosities, buildings that the private sector would never build because it's far too much money blown on overhead, but we get it for government at prevailing wage, the highest rate you can pay. Highest rate for all of the materials, for all of the labor, and overruns built in. And we're paying for that. That's the sort of corruption that I'm talking about today that drives me absolutely up the wall. When I go through an overpass, I don't want to be looking at the artwork, because when I do, although it's pretty, first, I should be concentrating on the road and the traffic around me. I shouldn't be looking at the latest rendering of an artist's version of some cave-dwelling painting. And on top of that, it really grinds my gears that I helped pay for that. I don't want to pay for that anymore. I don't want the government being so juiced up with all the influence and the money that those sorts of things go out to these contract bidders. Which leads me to really the baseline. Everybody seems to want to fix American government from the local level on up to the federal level because they're broken everywhere. The only place I could think of in the entire United States that has a good, solid government is Sandy Springs, Georgia. They have a different form of government. As a matter of fact, one of the city councilmen designed that form of government. They've been around since, I believe, it's 1996. Maybe it was 2006. Dave, do you recall? I don't remember.
Which one?
Sandy Springs, Georgia.
Oh, yes, the one that does everything privatized.
Everything by contract.
Right, right.
Everything by contract. And I've been trying to get our local politicians, just at the county level, to start a contract system here in Nye County. A couple of them have said, oh, we've looked at that, and we've even tried a couple of things. I've heard nothing about it.
Okay. Here's the first one we should do, okay? Because of the horror stories I'm hearing in our own community, and not once, not twice, not three times, across the board. Building inspectors and fire inspection. Okay, I'm sorry, who's the gentleman who's the chief of the fire department?
Scott Lewis.
Scott, nice guy. Met him several times, always been a lovely gentleman.
Very pleasant man.
Very pleasant man. I'm sorry, Scott, if you can't get your people out to do fire inspections on a timely basis, we have to take that away from you and privatize it. And the same thing with the building inspections.
I've been calling for that for some time. As a matter of fact, there are hundreds of instances of fraud that I personally found out about. Because when you have a business that's required to pay $75 fee for a fire inspection at the town of Pahrump to get a local business license, mm-hmm. You got to pay that fee. There is no option. The fire inspection ends up not happening.
Right. This is what I've heard time and again.
Now, I actually had all of that paperwork of all of the inspections that were paid for versus all the ones that were done. There were hundreds incomplete. Fraud on every single case, yeah. Which is a felony. I gave that information to Dan Weeks at the Pahrump Mirror. And after nearly a year, he got back to me and said, we looked into this. It happens everywhere. Wow, that's great. It's a much bigger story. No, it's really not that big a deal.
It doesn't happen everywhere. It does not happen everywhere.
I then got all of that information back from Dan, and I took it over to the Pahrump Valley Times, and I gave it to their editor at the time. And I said, would you be interested in this? Oh, yeah, bring it over. Nothing ever happened. As far as I know, Pahrump Valley Times still has all that information.
Yeah. There's a business town. I'm not going to name names because it seems like there can be retribution in this community from the government if people are known to be griping about how they've been mistreated. They'll get mistreated more by government.
Mm-hmm.
They were waiting for an alcohol license for their business. And one of the things that the state will not approve you for an alcohol license is if your fire inspection has not been completed. And it was almost a year from the time they paid their $75 fee and opened for business, because you can open for business without the inspection. The inspection is supposed to take place sometime in the relatively near future, right? And calling and writing and having their attorney contact a year. Now, mind you, they could not, obviously, most people are aware of how profitable alcohol is for a business. So when you're denying them that license, you're truly hurting them. It's not, oh, you never came to do the inspection, right? It's truly causing them financial distress. It's basically, it's screwing them, right? Finally, a year after they paid their $75 and begging and pleading and letters and attorneys, finally somebody from the fire department came out and did a fire inspection.
Everything that there is a private industry function for, mm-hmm. that the government does, the government should get out of. Yeah.
And I've also heard another thing. They come out and they do the inspection, but they never write the report. They walk through, yeah, everything looks good, or this, that, or fix that. You know,
and they never finish.
But the person from the fire department who's doing that, they never sit back down at their desk and complete the necessary report, so the businesses can't move forward with whatever comes next.
So if you had Bob's fire inspection and he didn't come out and Bob didn't do his good job, you could call down the street to Steve's fire inspection, have him come out.
Absolutely.
And if he didn't do a good job, call Tim and have him come.
And probably, because they're private sector companies, you could probably sue the crap out of them for the damages if they didn't act responsibly, right? They have a duty under the law to do this and such.
$75 fire inspection and they haven't done it, you can sue them for fraud.
Right. Try suing the county.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I'm getting at with all this is to get all of this corruption, we will never, ever fix government at any level until we get the money out of politics. Once we get the money out of politics, we can then finally start controlling it. But until we get all the money out, no lobbyists, no sort of funds that these people are allowed to take other than certain parameters. Once we get that money, and they're only allowed to bring in a certain amount of money to run for office, and there's a cap on that. Until we do that, mm-hmm. we will never fix government.
And certainly privatization is one way to start that process.
It is, and we should do it. We'll be right back. Segment 4, week, I don't know, what is it, 60, show 67, 68,
something like that.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Anyhow, this is a segment where we talk about, as long as it's interesting enough to us.
That's right.
Your viewer emails. So check them out here, davidbillshow@gmail.com. That is where you send those emails. If you want to catch up on some of the glorious shows of yore, totallyunprepared.info. You don't just have to watch the shows, which, of course, you get with us. You can listen to them.
You get the great entertainment effect.
And be mesmerized by
the audio.
Yeah, by our voices.
Our melodic voices.
Yes. So there you go. One of the things we want to chat about is something.
Stop.
Stopping. Oh. We are late into month 6 of the new carpet that has not been installed in the studios of PV Times. Month 7 is rapidly approaching.
We did tell them we were going to keep them updated on the carpet.
Yes, and I wish we could get the, I mean, it is nasty. There's tape, stains, it's gray. It probably was not originally gray. I'm guessing it was originally blue. But, it's filthy. Anyhow.
So it makes you want to go wash the bottom of your shoes when you get home.
It's just literally pull up the tack strips, lay this down. I don't even know you need to stretch it considering the type of carpet it is, but it's It's like a 30-minute job for anybody who knows how. I actually know a guy that could come do this whole job in about 30 or 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe in another 6 months.
You could.
No. No. I'm going to crawl around on the carpet with a kick. Anyhow.
Story
out of Oklahoma.
Yes. I think it actually got
vetoed by the governor, or maybe it was just passed by the Senate. I forget.
I think you're right. I looked at the story when it had passed the Senate.
Okay.
I think you're right, though. After I stopped following the story, I seem to recall having seen a headline, was passed by the Assembly, and went to the governor, and it was a big question mark whether the government was going to sign it. And the government did not.
Yeah, which is essentially, for all intents and purposes, banning abortion in Oklahoma.
Yes, yes. It would constitute on a practical basis, no matter how they want to characterize the language, it would be, on a practical basis, a complete ban of abortions in the state of Oklahoma, excepting in the case of risk of life to the mother.
Right. What about rape or incest?
No.
Oh, really? Okay,
no.
See, I didn't look into it that deep. But, however, interesting thing also about that is you have to figure that they would have had to fund this. Because you know they were going to go to court on it multiple times
right,
over.
Right.
So we're going to pass this law, and then we're going to set aside $5.7 million to fight it in court over the next
five or six years.
Supreme Court.
That's right.
Yeah, and in violation of Roe. Now, it's not so much if you agree or disagree with Roe v. Wade. It's not that. It's that the court has spoken, and this is the law of the land. Unfortunately, yet another thing that because we didn't figure it out ourselves as a populace, the government decided to get themselves involved.
Well, they had to because somebody filed suit.
So the government got involved, and the Supreme Court decided we're going to legislate from the bench on this one because nobody else has been able to do their job. You know what I really want them to legislate from the bench?
What's that?
The constant D.C. gun bans. Because they keep coming back. The D.C. Court of Appeals keeps coming back and saying, no, you're in violation of Heller.
Right.
No, you're in violation now. No, there's been five or six times in as many years.
Let's go back and define the conundrum that we talked about before the show, and then I do have a comment on the D.C. thing. The conundrum we're talking about is this. We'll use the pro-gun. Okay? People who are pro-gun quite appropriately point to Heller and McDonald and say, the court has spoken. Okay? Case closed. The right to keep and bear arms, not just own them, but carry them, is now pronounced by the United States Supreme Court to be an individual, constitutionally protected right. And yet we see these municipalities continually passing laws which are not even... It's inarguable that they're in opposition to Heller and McDonald. I mean,
California keeps doing it at the state level. They got two massive competing anti-gun laws, one written by the lieutenant governor, one written by the Senate pro tem, and they are fighting to see which one can beat the other one to get them passed.
Right. Now, the pro-gun people in Oklahoma, we'll use that as an example, would say much the same thing you and I have said, which is, stop it. If the Supreme Court has declared it to be a constitutionally protected individual inalienable right, stop passing laws that oppose it.
But not in Roe.
That's right. When it comes to Roe, it's a whole different story. You know, it's like, okay, guys, try using somewhat the same rules on the playing field. You know, it's like, with guns, if the court has spoken, you have to stop passing those laws.
It's called hypocrisy. As a matter of fact, I was in a meeting over this last week where there was potentially some decisions were going to be made which were going to be hypocritical to the baseline that was established in the same organization several months ago.
Yeah.
And I made some moves to make sure that didn't happen.
And a quick comment on Roe, because of course, whenever people are asking the side that supports legislation like the governor vetoed in Oklahoma, they say, well, we want to run this back up to the Supreme Court again. You know, we want to overturn Roe. It's like, okay, first of all, have you not looked at the composition of the court? Okay. And I don't care if Donald Trump becomes president and fills Scalia's vacancy. It's not going to change that dynamic one iota. Secondly, the decision in Roe was twofold. Number one, that fetuses don't have personhood, so they're not affected by the 14th Amendment. And secondly, that the right of privacy prevents the state, the government, from intruding on the privacy of the woman who's making her private decision. Okay, so that's a two-plank decision. People who imagine
let's say it takes 3 years to run a law like that up, that in 2019, the United States Supreme Court, as comprised or as it would be comprised, is going to overturn both those planks or either of those planks. These people have lost their fucking minds.
You know, another bit of hypocrisy that I see is that now I know a little boy who's a little over 2 years old now, mm-hmm. who was born premature, but he was still within the window of late term abortion. As a matter of fact, 2 to 3 weeks later, he could have been aborted late term. He's alive today. So there's a bit of a wake-up call with that.
You know, the whole abortion issue from front to back is complex and very unappealing.
It is. Yeah. There's hypocrisy where you can have these late-term abortions, yet if you say you stab, shoot, however, kill a woman who's pregnant, mm-hmm. you get charged with double homicide. But that baby has no rights before it's just
right.
hypocrisy.
And that
double
thing, that where you get double homicide if you kill a woman who has a fetus, that's never been to the Supreme Court. And if it does, under the doctrine established in Roe, which is that fetuses have no personhood, that'll be struck down. I mean, that fast. It's not
or
even a question mark.
Roe will be changed.
No, that's not going to happen.
One or the other.
Yeah, yeah, but that is the odds are virtually zero of that. But back to the D.C. question.
Yes.
I am with you 1,000% on that. The courts keep saying unconstitutional, you have not met the requirement.
And they just did it again about 2 weeks ago.
Right. You have not met the requirement under Heller. Then they say, okay, they go back to the drawing boards. They pass another set of laws, unconstitutional, you haven't met the standard, and again and again and again. So if I were the judge, okay, here's what I would do. Because I, as a judge, I would not continue to play this, okay? I'll give you guys a couple bites at the apple. If it's clear you're being a bunch of sphincters and you have no intention of complying with Heller, then what I'm going to do is create an order that says the next thing that you pass must comply with these standards, okay? These are the standards that are reasonable under Heller. If you pass anything else, then I will issue a decree in this case that what the law is. Now, that's going to set up a huge battle between the executive in D.C. and the judiciary. But there has once the D.C. government is a defendant in this case, it is incumbent upon the court to give the losing party the guidelines for constitutionality. And to allow them to just continue again and again and again for the next 50 years to enact ridiculous unconstitutional laws is, I don't think, an appropriate role for the court.
You and I chatted about this some time ago. We figured two different D.C. Court of Appeals decisions ago they would have done this.
Yeah.
And then after the last one, well, maybe they gave them a last chance. Then they came back again recently, just a couple weeks ago, because I think there's been 68 concealed weapons permits issued.
Yes.
In the entire city.
Of which one of my buddy George's has one. You know, it's interesting because, yeah, I think it's 66, 67, something like that. We were having dinner. He was out here a couple months back, and he told me he was one of the, I think he said 66, that have it. And I said, and he was an original plaintiff in the original suit, right?
Okay.
And I said, when they made their decision to issue it to you, do you think that they were aware that you were a plaintiff? Yeah. Oh, yes. And he's an attorney. So I imagine the equation was he's an attorney. He was an original plaintiff. Let's take him out of the game. He can't be a plaintiff if we grant him a permit.
Here's another thing that drives me nuts about that whole thing is let's take California, for instance, our neighbor to the west.
Yeah.
They have completely restrictive concealed weapons permits and no open carry permit. Well, you can get an open carry permit. It's the same process going through a concealed permit. So nobody does it. It's the same process.
I think the only process for open carry in California now is to go through an agency they have called BSIS and get licensed as a security guard. Then you can carry open.
Okay. My point being is I, as a Nevada resident, have no provision in California for being able to carry. They don't even have a provision under their law for me as an out-of-state resident to apply for a concealed weapons permit, and they have no reciprocity with any other concealed weapons permits.
Right.
So there's good grounds right there to sue by saying, look, I want to come to California and be able to afford myself the opportunity to protect myself. But you have no mechanism for even allowing for that. So no visitors to the state of California, anybody who's a non-resident state of California, there's absolutely no way for them to be able to protect themselves.
And if we accept self-defense as an unalienable right, and that doesn't mean that because the government says so, all we can do is pick up a rock. That's our only option, or a piece of wood that happens to be laying on the ground. If there's a better available option, self-defense, the mode of self-defense is up to the person defending.
And the problem I see with this also, Dave, is we had the Supreme Court rule three times in under a decade that nobody is afforded the police have no obligation to have to provide individual protection to any individual citizen.
Ever.
Ever. Just to the community as a whole. So that means you could be having your ass whipped by a baseball bat in your front yard as the cops drive by and they don't have to stop.
Right.
However, you have to apply to the same leader of that particular group, sheriff or chief of police, to ask them, may I please have permission to carry a gun? Ridiculous.
And we'll see you next week. Take care.